Hey, True Crime Cast fans. I want to tell you about a new podcast on the Stoveleg Network that you need to check out. It's called Artrageous. It's a show about crimes, mysteries, and the oddities of the art and design world.
We have that first episode available for you now. Go ahead and like and subscribe and join in on the conversation.
Welcome to Artrageous, a weekly podcast about the truly outrageous stories in the art and design world. Welcome, everyone, to our inaugural episode of Artrageous, a podcast where we talk about the outrageous and fun stories of the art and design world. I have a whole list of ideas to talk about on this show, but I figured we start out with an interesting story for those of you who like a little bit of mystery and crime. But first, a quick little background on your host. Hi, my name is Carrie. I'm a full-time graphic designer and part-time jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none artist from the Midwest. I graduated from an art school with art and design in the name, so I guess you could say that I have lived my life in the art and design world for a while now. I'm the type of person who can't go to a restaurant without judging the menu design, but if the food's good, I'll let it slide and go home to work on my next crazy project while binge-listening to some type of medical drama. Over the past few years, I've been collecting mental notes on stories related to the art world, and I think it's finally time to share them through a podcast. I know, everyone has a podcast these days, but if my stories can spark some conversation during your next family dinner or awkward date, or even just keep your mind moving while driving or working out, then I'll consider this podcast a success. But back to our regularly scheduled programming. Today's topic is one that I don't think very many people think about. I was scrolling through Facebook, catching up on people's wedding and cat photos, when I came across an article about a piece of art that was being auctioned off, but it had to be pulled from the listings because a woman claimed the painting belonged to her family before it was stolen by Nazis during World War II. Now, naturally, I put my phone down, did some stuff for work, failed at completing a load of laundry, and when I came back later, I couldn't find the article. But it did get me thinking about George Clooney and Matt Damon in a movie from 2014. So, cue turning on the movie The Monuments Men in the background, and a long evening of internet searches, and my mind was blown. I'm not talking about the acting skills of George Clooney and Matt Damon. What I'm talking about is how the Nazi regime was surprisingly prolific at things other than blowing stuff up and eliminating entire populations. Art theft. On a massive scale. From as early as 1938, the Nazi regime started looting more than 2 million art pieces. Where did they put it all? Well, that's part of the problem. Despite the Nazis being known for their thorough record-keeping, a significant amount of artwork is still missing and unaccounted for. Although the Allied armies managed to salvage a lot of German records, there were still some questions. How was the art stolen? What happened after the art was found? How would all of these pieces get back to their owners? Unfortunately, I don't have 3 hours to get into the nerdy bits and answer all of these questions in as much detail as I found, but the good news is that I can give you a link to a couple articles and references in the show notes. I'm hoping that with each one of these stories, I can give you a little takeaway and show you where my outrageous tangents are coming from. So check out the show notes for more once we're done here. Now let's talk about that first question. How was the art stolen? To answer that, I think we have to get a little bit into the history of the art-loving Nazi regime first. It's somewhat common knowledge that Hitler wanted to be an artist before setting his sights on world domination. Sadly, even his regime's regard for the arts was a little askew. From a cultural perspective, the goal of the Nazi Party was to rid Germany of art created during a period known as the Weimar Republic, from 1924 to 1930, when Germany was a leading cultural center for art, cinema, and literature. The Nazi regime was not too big a fan of the decadence surrounding the Weimar Republic's art, and that led to Hitler shutting down art schools in 1933, as well as purging the so-called degenerate art from the public. Basically, anything of French or German origin in the areas of Cubism, Expressionism, or Impressionism were deemed degenerate and were removed. To give you an idea, that first wave accounted for approximately 16,000 of the pieces we're talking about today. Slowly, the art looting that started as an ideological principle became an organized government policy. The first official rounds of Nazi confiscations began in Austria in 1938 when it was annexed into the German Reich. This was then followed by art confiscations in Poland in 1939. Soon after, Nazi bureaucratic agencies were established in the newly occupied territories and were charged with confiscating art. In April 1938, one of Hitler's inner circle, Hermann Göring, issued the Decree Regarding the Reporting of Jewish Property, requiring that every Jew in the Reich assess all property owned and then report it to Nazi authorities, art included. Goring also helped establish the Einsatzstab, Reichsleiter, Rosenberg, which we will call the ERR because I probably totally butchered that pronunciation. The ERR was the official Nazi office charged with confiscating prominent art collections in the Western Nazi-occupied territories. From 1940 to 1944, it looted more than 21,000 individual objects from over 200 Jewish-owned collections. And then there was another decree in 1940 where Hitler ordered the confiscation of all Jewish art collections, as these materials were now deemed ownerless, since Jews in France and most of Europe no longer had property rights. Art was being taken left and right, and there was nothing that could be done to stop it. I mentioned earlier that the Nazis were pretty good at record keeping. For every object acquired by the Nazis, the ERR staff created an inventory card that listed the artist's name, the medium the piece was created in, the item's dimensions, and in many cases, a photograph of the piece. Many cards also had a little stamp on them with either AH or HG, indicating if the object was going to Hitler's museum in Linz or to Goring's personal collection. Anything that didn't make the cut was then sold at auction in international art markets to help fuel the Nazi war machine. Wars are expensive, and this one was funded by stolen art. Before I ask my next question, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back, everyone. We just talked about how a ridiculous number of art pieces were stolen by the Nazi regime during World War II. But what do you do with all that art? There was so much of it. How was it all recovered? The identification and recovery of these pieces wasn't exactly easy. The Allies learned of the Nazi art confiscations in 1943, and even though the Allies still had to liberate Europe, United States President Franklin D. Roosevelt established the American Commission for the Protection and Salvage of Artistic and Historical Monuments in War Areas. Yikes. I'm not saying that mouthful 100 times throughout the story, so we'll call it by its other name, not the Roberts Commission, but what by the officers were called, the Monuments Men. While the aforementioned George Clooney and Matt Damon did indeed do a great job of depicting what this group did, I'll spell it out in case you don't want to spend $2.99 to rent it on Amazon Prime. The Monuments Men were mainly young art professors and museum curators who were hired for their museum experience and art history education. Their main goal was the protection of cultural treasures in European war zones. The Roberts Commission handed them maps, lists, and handbooks, and their goal was to travel across Europe, documenting war damage and create lists of sites needing protection. In spring of 1945, the Monuments Men discovered hundreds of caves and mines that stored Nazi caches. The first mine they investigated was a copper mine where they found paintings by Rembrandt, Van Gogh, and Rubens. Those are some pretty big names in the art world. And among those items was also an original score of Beethoven's Sixth Symphony. In the Merker salt mine, they found millions of Reichsmarks and gold bars, non-monetary gold such as gold tooth fillings and jewelry, and they found art from more than a dozen German state museums. Patton's Third Army also got in on the game of Lost and Found in May of 1945 when they found the salt mine at Alt Aussee in Austria, which housed more than 6,500 paintings for Hitler's museum in Linz and stolen Italian art for Goring's personal collection. A fun little tangent here. One of the biggest problems the Monuments Men ran into was keeping their own friends in the Allied forces from stealing the stolen art and sending the pieces home to friends and family. When using off-limits signs didn't work, they began marking areas with white tape, which was the Allies' indication of unexploded mines. Amusing how they were employing tricks of war to curtail stolen art. I guess the subterfuge and scare tactics were successful, though, because that leads me to the next questions I asked. What happened after all that art was found? And how would all of these pieces get back to their owners? There was just so much art. What do you do with it all? Despite my short internship in an art gallery in 2017, I'm not an archival expert, but I don't think canvas and paint would fare too well in a salt mine. Having found so many stolen art pieces, the Monuments Men, with the aid of Allied troops, faced two huge tasks: removing the art from where they were found and transporting them to safe storage areas within U.S. occupation zones. All of the pieces were moved to one of four facilities where the items were identified, described, and photographed. At the height of the recovery, Munich held more than a million individual objects, and Wiesbaden held more than 700,000. With so many pieces of art and such mass casualties and destruction in Europe, it's no surprise that not all of the pieces were reunited with their original owners. As the years passed, a lot of them ended up in museums like the Louvre or even made their way to New York and beyond. After time passes, these museums assume ownership. But now, more than ever, we're hearing about international disputes over ownership and restitution. There was even an allegation in November of 2021 that Switzerland's largest art museum might be displaying up to 90 works with quote-unquote problematic provenances. But what's being done about it? Can the museums really just hoard all of this art that was stolen to begin with? The Louvre itself holds around 1,700 pieces of Nazi-looted works of art. That's one of the biggest art museums in the world, right at the center of the controversy. So what does the Louvre do? In 2018, they open an exhibition featuring the art that was stolen by the Nazis. While the museums are often suspected of wanting to keep pieces, the goal of this exhibit was to reunite these orphaned pieces with their rightful owners. And of course, there are critics out there saying that this isn't enough, and questioning what else is being done to further the goal of getting the pieces back to their owners. But at least it's a start. Since the 1950s, a little over 100 looted objects, including about 50 paintings, have been returned to their legitimate owners or descendants. So the work is very slow and there's still a lot to do. It helps that governments around the world are getting involved more too. In 1988, 44 different countries signed a set of international guidelines for returning Nazi stolen art, which has led to countries like Austria and Germany returning tens of thousands of stolen items to their countries of origin. In 2015, the French government struck a deal with a national organization of genealogists to help track down the heirs of original owners. And as recently as August of 2022, the New York governor signed a law requiring that State of New York museums are now required to acknowledge if a work of art was stolen by the Nazi regime. And of course, because everyone sues everyone nowadays, you have all the lawsuits. There was a historian named J.H. Scheps who claimed two Picasso paintings were rightfully his, but in 2009 he settled for an undisclosed amount with the Museum of Modern Art and the Guggenheim, who still got to keep the pieces. There are also two other paintings worth over $3.4 million being held by a private London-based art dealer. When he lost that lawsuit to the ancestors of the original owner, the pieces were then auctioned and the proceeds went to a foundation that supports young artists. So I guess you could say that there's just been a lot of chaos since the very start of this whole debacle. Art being looted and then stolen back, art being held hostage until a lawsuit determines its rightful owner, and art that still sits unclaimed with a big question mark over where it came from and what its future holds. At the end of the day, I think we can all just agree that stealing is bad, and we just shouldn't do it, especially with super expensive and sentimental things. Although it may make for some great movies, sometimes you just have to sit back and marvel at the chaos. Well, guys, that about wraps it up for this first episode of Artrageous. I hope I did the story some justice and got your brains thinking a little bit about this weird world of art we live in. If you like the episode, go ahead and give me a review. I want to hear what you guys think and your reactions to this crazy story. Before I sign off, I just want to give a super quick thank you to the Stoveleg Media Network of Podcasts. I have a really awesome group of people supporting me, so please check out some of our other shows if you have time. I'll be back next week with another episode for you about something a little bit more recent. You might have even noticed it as you scroll through your social media. Until then, stay artrageous. Series music created by Arensen. Music and transition sounds licensed from Motion Array. Artrageous is a proud partner of Stoveleg Media.
Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.